Welcome to the Space Cave. I'm David Huntsberger. We're finding ourselves deep out in the middle of space, removed from everything chaotic, nice and quiet and relaxing. And then let's go see what's going on Earth. What happened that was new? Who knows? Hopefully you've been watching the Olympics. Not hopefully, but if you are watching the Olympics, hopefully you're enjoying them. There's a lot of talk going on about them. I could throw in my two cents, but I don't really feel too passionately one way or another. I will say the Star Spangled Banner is not the best representation of the United States, in my opinion. I think America the Beautiful is a way better song, but that's neither here nor there. So wouldn't it be better in the future to hear that little melody? I suppose, but that's looked at as highly unpatriotic, which I understand, but they're both good songs, I would say, but I think America the Beautiful is better. That's how I feel. And if that makes me a terrible American, well, I can live with that. But I think it's just a better representation of the United States. If you live elsewhere, I hope you are getting to hear your song. Here in the United States, they're really keep an eye on that medal count. It makes us feel like we can look the other way at how bad our education system is and various other things. Like, yeah, but we're still the overall medal winners. We're the best. And that does feel good. So hopefully you're swelling with pride if you are an American over these last few weeks and proud of our swimmers and kayakers and whoever else is winning. I think the horse stuff is ridiculous. I don't see why someone that can jump a horse should be allowed in the Olympics. It's absurd. I like seeing the teams where there's a bit of diversity, which is nice. You know, like everything in the Olympics seems so separated by where you grew up economically and so on. But you know, you see, like, I haven't really watched a lot of soccer, but the volleyball teams are, you know, it's a good mix, and that's what makes America great. Like, we've got a bit of everybody, and we're all chipping in, and we're kicking the crap out of everyone as a group, as a team. Anyway, I'll digress. Let's get into the episode. This is number 50, which we won't really celebrate. It's not that big of a deal. 52, that's the real sweetheart. So when that one comes along, there'll be some posters for sale on the website, a limited amount. I want to make it worthwhile and also something that's kind of special. So there's not going to be, and I don't want to have a bunch of posters laying around here. So there'll be a limited amount of posters, but, and it'll be kind of like maybe a little fundraising thing. This show is put together through listeners like you. So if you donate on the website or anything like that, you're helping the show to buy beer, to pay for electronic equipment and things like that. And the hosting and bandwidth and all this business. So there's no ads, there's no corporate network, man, breathing down our throats or anything like that. It's just a nice little break from all of that world of advertising and branding and all these things that inevitably infiltrate art, and we've given up on that. I think everyone has just said, you can't beat it. If you're a band, the best you can hope for is to get your song in some sort of a beer commercial or a minivan commercial or something like that, and that's terrible. It used to be that you would you'd make some money because people would come out to shows and whatnot. We can get into that down the road. Anyway, number 50, kind of exciting, but 52, that'll be the one where we really let our hair down and celebrate 52 consecutive weeks, one calendar year of the Space Cave. But if you'd like to pour out a little beer or pour it into your own throat, why pour it on the ground for number 50? Feel free. We're 50 episodes in. Thanks for being a part of it. If you've listened to all of them, that's fantastic. So let's continue it with part two of my chat with Austin Comedian, who now lives in Los Angeles and is a talented web designer and animator, and he draws comics, and he's just a thoroughly interesting guy. I hope you enjoyed part one of our chat, and this is part two with more beer from June Lake Brewing. Here's more with me and Ramin Nazer. Nice to be fairly clandestine as well, you know, where you're like, you are the rainbow skull in the black background. But yeah, like you say, like if people dig into it to find out who Ramin Nazer is, they go, oh, well, this guy does stand-up as well, and he's an animator, and they kind of all funnel into one central place, I guess.
Yeah, they all have a little something to do with each other, I guess. They're not completely crazily unrelated. Mm-hmm. But also, it's something that, and who knows, maybe it'll change, like all the other logos can change. Like, it'll probably be more, I don't know, like nicer looking, like higher production value of everything. But in that way, like I always felt uncomfortable, like putting my face as the main thing, like a headshot, like even if you go to auditions, like you're kind of hiding your headshot as you're walking to the audition, like up against your the side
never,
of you.
I stopped taking them.
Sometimes
I would never go. I would just go, oh, didn't they send you one? I thought they emailed you one.
Oh,
you
that's
go,
smart. No. See, that's probably like that's a tell, probably. The fact that I bring one, it's like, oh, this is an amateur. He brought the thing instead
Everyone else would always have one, and I would just stick to my guns of like, if this is going to work out, it doesn't matter if they have a picture of my face.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, I hosted a television show, no headshot. It can be done. And yeah. I was really proud of that. Of like, oh, yeah, I didn't have to. It's just, you're sitting in a room.
That's a success story right there. I mean, who cares about how it ended up, but the fact
sure,
that.
Sure, yeah. Getting it off the ground. And then I remember my manager being like, oh, sweet. Now with the show, you can finally get some pictures taken.
But isn't it odd behavior that we hide the photo of ourselves, but we're trying to get the photo of ourselves everywhere, like on billboards and on your screen and on the TV and stuff. But it's like, don't look at it while I'm carrying it.
But I don't think that way. I think like a podcast, like doing comics, doing stand-up, I don't like how your face becomes synonymous with, like you were just talking about, kind of like, you know, you do that thing because it represents sort of the brand of you, the rainbow skull, as opposed to like, I appreciate that so much more than like, oh, that person's face, that whimsical look that's like, what's the deal with planet Earth? That's on every comedy club wall in the world. Is like, is that it? Is that what we've been reduced to just see someone's face and go, I'd pay $12 to go watch that person.
Yeah.
It's just asinine to me. I don't like it. And I don't think that necessarily like, the goal is to be on buses and promotion.
No, that's like bad, that. Actually. Like, I don't know how to do this yet. I don't think the technology exists for it yet. I think it's where we're going, hopefully. So, before, like, we kind of get annoyed, like, when you're looking on Amazon or something, and you buy a thing, and then you get an ad for that same product on your news feed. Like, do you ever notice that you're looking up something and then all of a sudden like it knows what I was looking for? And at first we got a little weird because our privacy, but now we don't give a shit about privacy because it's just it's game on now. It's 2016. Like, we've been complaining about that for 6 years. It only gets worse. We don't actually storm the streets. We've got stuff to do, and
we said we would, though.
Yeah, it's just where things are going. So let's just not storm the streets. Let's just see where this takes us. And it's easy to be like, oh no, but look at, like, before, like, if you go into the past, you're getting subjected to, like, tampon ads, antidepressants you don't want. You're getting, like, subjected to messages you don't want. So you don't want to be on a billboard. You don't want to be the message that people don't want. You want the people that potentially would like you to be exposed to you, but you don't want to be broadcast out to, like, look at me. It's like, I hate that guy so much on the bus. I'm successful. I have to see his fucking head every day.
I just don't feel like there are that. There are like movie posters. There are the Accidentes guy on the backs of buses.
Now, that guy I like.
Yeah, I love that guy.
But that's like an example of someone I'm not going to use, but I like, because I think it's just novel. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I don't know what advertising works. I definitely don't think that either of our like stand-up careers would be different if they were like billboards of our faces.
No, not like, at all. Not in 2016. Maybe in 90. That's a big problem, which I've only recently gotten over, but I think a lot of people haven't gotten over, is you can't be a stand-up, you can't be a comic in 1998 anymore, or in 1980. You can only be a comic in 2016, and that involves a lot of the bullshit surrounding it, the social media stuff, the executives only caring about these metrics type of things, the faster turnover, all that stuff. And it's gotten a lot better for people, because it was like a boys club, so like there's more opportunities for people that aren't just the straight white dude. So it's changed in a lot of ways, but you can't just be the thing that we grew up wanting to be. It's like time has passed. these people have already made these advancements in art. What are you going to contribute, and how are you going to behave? Because you can't behave like a 1998 guy anymore.
Which is so good. I like to see it just flooded like this, because eventually someone's going to be creative and change it. That's in any thing, you know,
disruption.
Like,
yeah,
we were talking about Twitter last time, and I started it like in 2008, like right after it started.
No one used it for 2 years. It was a complete. This is.
It was just links to things that I liked, like a lot of web comics that I liked. They would link, here's a new one, and so I followed them, and then people would follow me for like the same. I remember thinking like, wow, I have like 90 people somewhere in the world. I don't know who they are. They're all these little avatars that are just curious, like, when I'm going to post my next thing.
And they were real back then. Early on, 90 yeah. was real. Because Facebook, it was like, well, those are people I've met in real life, and we're just kind of doing the courtesy of... Twitter kind of introduced the dynamic of not instant follow back as a result of friending. It's like, I'm submitting to you. It's like, I will also submit to you. I'm submitting to you. Who are you? I've got 10,000. I don't have time for you. You're nothing.
If it would have just stayed at an RSS feed... It's like everything's trying to go around and be essentially what that is. It's the best. It's just, if you subscribe to someone's thing, you get content when they make it, immediately notified to you, like, boop, new stuff from this person. And everyone's tried to recreate that, and it never got enough credit. Like, an RSS feed never got enough, like, oh, this is the best. This is exactly what you want the internet to be. Just click on all the things you like, and then they'll deliver it right to you.
I think it wasn't... It wasn't easy enough for most people. I think you need to be a little smarter to figure out how to get the feed going, whereas Twitter, it's like, it guides you through, look, a blue bird, and it's blue, and it's got cartoons, it's easy, and like even the subtle things, like, I pay attention to, like, your sign-up form, like, does your password light up, does the password field stay red until it's accepted and then become green, or does it force you to submit and then tell you your password's wrong, re-enter it again? Like, just that little extra time is turning off a lot of potential users, because they're like, no, fuck this, or like, what, I have to do my address too? It's like the submit form, like, nope, just a username, don't even worry about a password, we'll send you one and you can change it later. Yeah, so just little, like, things of making the interaction 3 seconds long instead of 7 seconds long is, it's so much like a sprint now, where it's like, that guy's just as fast, but he won by a nose. Doesn't matter. This guy's the winner, the guy that was a nose ahead.
That is funny.
Only care about number one.
Yeah, the world record time and or fifth place, and they less than a tenth of a second. I see, like, Marissa Mayer's in the news because she... or she was recently, and I think Yahoo's not in great shape. And then
the company,
the company of Yahoo, that she
What do they do? Like, are they just a news site now? Because they're not dominating the search platform. They bought MySpace and kind of fucked it up, or it was fucked up, and they bought it and didn't.
Well, MySpace could be cool because, like, they sort of replaced Groove Shark. They're like one of the only places now where you can go listen to, like, entire albums of music.
So, really, MySpace.
MySpace, yeah, has quietly become like this. You know, decent place where, like, oh, I want to check out a new band, or there's an old record that I want to listen to. You can go find it on MySpace.
Is it legal?
Yeah. Because Groove Shark got shut down because they were not legal. They were, like, skirting all these, you know, essentially, like, robbing artists, I guess. But
I don't think they were, but they were just taking audio from YouTube, from what I understand. So they were, like, piggybacking on YouTube's content, and then with the way people would upload, like, a song with lyrics on it, instead of showing the video, they would just show that. I could be wrong, but...
That makes sense. Okay.
That's my memory of it from 2010, when I first looked at it.
Anyway, Yahoo Now, I go on it sometimes, because I just like relics, and they had Other Space, and they tried to do Community, and they were, like, going to become sort of like a competitor for Netflix and Hulu. Like, oh, Yahoo has stuff now. They're producing their own original content, and I guess that failed so badly. They dismissed all that, got rid of that part of it. They don't even have, like, I don't know that they're even creating any content. It's just a news site. But you click on an article, and then it takes you to another screen. So if you're, like, writing code, you would write _ blank. So now you're on a new tab. You go, okay. And then you look, the address of that new tab is still yahoo.com, and it's like it prefaces what you're going to read. Like, oh, you know that link that was enough for you to already click on a link? this is just that in a bigger form. Now you've got to click on another link to actually get to the article. It's so maddening.
It's an advertising arbitrage. It's a slideshow type thing, and now it looks like they're just trying to grasp.
I can't even describe it well. It's not like one of those sponsored things where like 20 stars. It would be like...
It's just bad design?
I don't know what they're trying to do. You click on an article, or you click on a link. So like... Caltech researchers find proof that there might be a planet 9. Oh, awesome. Click on that. The next tab says yahoo.com. You scroll down a bit and it gives you 5 sentences and then dot, dot, dot. It says read more. You're like, yeah, that's why I clicked on them. What are you doing, Yahoo? And I don't know why I keep falling for it, because there are millions, if not billions now, of other sites that I could be using. But I got in the game early with Yahoo and I keep feeling like they're going to come back around or something. But I just desperately hate them now. Anyway, that's neither here nor there.
That's very interesting. It just made me think for a second, like what it doesn't know what it is. And that seems like such a, it's not trying to get your ad money, but why would they? So it sounds like it's a preview click, and then you get half of it, and then you get the rest after you fully.
Yeah. It would be like looking at a menu and be like, ooh, I want to, and then you'd have to open the menu to another page to read half of the description of the meal, and then another final page to be like, okay, here's all of it.
And then they bring you half of it, and then you have to put your hand up to get the waiter. Have you ever noticed that when you first moved out here, and we're both in the same area of Los Angeles pretty much, but if you're just a normal person, like waiters, just servers, they love you. Like they think that you're just the best customer they've ever had. Like just by being just by not flagging them down and like asking them for weird stuff. If you're just normal, like baseline is.
I feel like I've stayed at that level. I'm never dismissive or like, yeah. You know, I'll go, hey, how's it going? Or I'll even just something as simple as that. Like I notice that when people say, hey, at the grocery store, how's it going? If you say, good, you. They go, hey, thanks for asking.
Yeah.
Like, no one asks them. It's all that princess thing of like, fine. And then they just start looking at their groceries. That's not even a person there.
It's just there's so many assholes out here. I don't have to deal with them because I'm just such a homebody in general. But just I think servers had to deal with so many assholes that if you're just a normal person, they love it.
Yeah, I also just don't like... My diet does not consist of many eccentric, like, can you take this off and add a little bit of this? But can you cook this? I don't have any of that. It's like... I'll take the food you're serving and whatever shows up, I'll eat it. So I think they probably enjoy that it's pretty simple.
Do you remember Chris Allen? And
did
you know, I forget who's over time, but Chris Allen and Sonny, two friends of ours in Austin, like I remember him saying that one of his tests for her was that she didn't order any, like had no changes to the menu on their first date. Like just the fact that if there's something like mayo or something you don't like, you just don't order that sandwich, just get a different thing. And I love that was a test.
Chad Daniels has that joke about like he was at the airport in Detroit.
He's so underrated, even though like he's not amongst comics, but I think Chad's like one of the best.
He's real funny.
Stand-ups, like just put him in any situation, put him up in front of 2 people or in front of 10,000 people, and it's just good.
Yeah,
he's underrated, but yeah, go on.
He has that joke about like eating a sandwich. And then some guy next to him goes like, oh, he's taking the pickles off of it. And the guy's like, if you didn't want it with pickles, why didn't you order it without pickles? And there's more to the joke beyond that. But I just like that. Like, that defines him in a weird way. Like, that's kind of, and I think you're similar, probably just like, oh, I don't want to be a bother to anyone. I'll figure it out after I get the food. Just don't make the cooks go through any extra things.
Yeah.
I can take pickles off.
I always
off
wonder,
of it.
Like, if it's low self-esteem or if it's, I don't know where it stems from. But
they all think they're not being a bother either. They go, I hate to do this. It's just a small thing, and then it's 4 steps. You're like, you're an asshole. I would not want to do that.
Yeah, that was one of those like we didn't have a single one yet. I'm so glad we had one. There's like one of those pockets, like in a podcast, like every hour you do. There's got to be one little pocket of like both people for like 3 seconds. They don't have anything particular to say. Just
well, the last one we almost had that way.
Last podcast or last statement?
No, the last brief moment where there was like a pregnant pause. I went then never mind. And then you were like, no, I was thinking of a response. So this time I thought, I'll let it sink in. Yeah, he's really churning
time,
over there.
No, this time he had nothing.
So you didn't come the first time we had this scheduled because you were like, oh, I'm low on sleep. And I'll be better guest when I'm well rested, which it'd be great if I was like, you get over here now. I want you tired. I want you in your natural state. But you're a homebody, you're animating nonstop, you're drawing, you're playing bass, you're scoring things, you're doing voiceover for the animations you make, you're illustrating, you're making your comics.
It's doing too much.
What daily? Yeah, girl, you're doing too much. What are you doing every day? Why? What's the philosophy behind it? Do you love it? Are you doing it because of a challenge you gave yourself? Give me an idea of who Ramin Nazer is.
So, I didn't really understand this till recently, and I still don't know it. But I think anyone expressing themselves, it's all just part of one thing. And Frank Zappa called his work, like, it might just seem irreverent, different albums, but it's all part of one thing, and he called it Project Object. Mm-hmm. And Project Object all has to deal with each other, and I'm seeing what I'm doing is slowly building my own world, and hopefully means of financial support for the rest of my life. So super long game. I want to build something the same way Jim Henson built his, like, universe. Like, you can tell, like, oh, that's Jim Henson. Like, that's his style. Mm-hmm. And the voice. And, like, it's got a feel to it. Zappa had that. Or, like, with on the business side, like how Chris Hardwick made Nerdist, except I don't have the interest in being, not to dismiss Nerdist. Nerdist is very good, but it's, like, they're more of a DJ. Like, Nerdist they sample other content. They're like, hey, look at Avengers, like this new Avengers thing going on. Oh, look at Walking Dead. So it's talking about stuff that's going on. So they're doing that. But I just don't have any interest in, like, oh, this, I'm really into this. Like, I enjoy those things, but I don't like them in my work. Like, I don't like to talk about stuff. I like to generate from, which is why there is a lot of hip hop that I like, and I guess there's some DJ things that I'd probably like, but I never seek it out. Like, my big guys are like Hendrix and Prince and Zappa and from the gut kind of guys. Like, yeah, you might not like it, but there are some people that like it, and I try to make, like, not let them down.
You're drawing comics from the gut.
Yeah, I want to do that. I want to have a body of work that I look back 10 years from now and like, or 20 years and all that kind of stuff.
The vault thing we mentioned previously, like, I think Emily Dickinson, you think about how many artists are famous to everyone. It's Shakespeare, Disney.
And only by name, too. It's like everyone knows Shakespeare the same way they know Einstein. Like, E=MC². Yeah. Like, to be or not to be. Like, what else you got? That's all I know about him.
Shakespeare, yeah, you're right. Like, they know a line from Hamlet. They don't.
They have the most width, but they don't have the... So these are such, like, business, businessy terms, but, or marketing terms, not even business terms. But the width refers to, like... 10 million people know this person, but
yeah.
How much depth? Like, okay, we just know, like, E=MC². So not a lot of depth there, but, like, mm-hmm. someone, like with you, you have the depth of people, like, know the thing that you're into, and they know, like, they listen to...
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know.
I'm not saying everyone that knows you knows that, but you have, like, depth with a lot of people, which is good, whereas a lot of people that get skyrocketed to comedy fame, like... I won't name names, but we see them, like, the people that they've been doing comedy for 3 years and they already have their hour specials and stuff. They don't have the depth. Like, the people watching them aren't all about that person. I bet in 3 years they're not going to really care about them.
Yeah.
Unless they change and evolve and that kind of thing. Because the Beatles could have been seen as a boy band, but they changed and evolved, and that's why they became the Beatles, because they had all their eras and different sounds and... That's a terrible way to describe it. Just different eras and different sounds. The Beatles, the autobiography.
I think I know what you mean. That they tried to, even if they weren't playing from the gut, they tried to go back and get in tune with it, get in touch with it.
But I want to go back to that statement because I interrupted you a little bit. There's only five artists that people know. Shakespeare.
Like art. And Emily Dickinson is up there. Even if she doesn't jump to people's mind initially, and yet if you mention her, most people go like, oh, yeah, poet, right? Someone at a monster truck rally maybe go, oh, yeah, isn't she like agoraphobic or something? And I think what it is that resonates with people is, like, it's subjective whether you enjoy her work or not. It's, you know, it's poetry, but the fact that it was for her, that she genuinely loved it, that she just did it just for enjoyment. She wasn't out branding it or marketing it or trying to solicit it to any, and if And I think maybe that's why people like that Prince, not the musician, but the idea that like a knight in shining armor is going to show up and be like, your work has been deemed good. I shall now distribute it to the rest of the world. Because that A&R people used to do that in the record world. And that, you know, Gary Larson went to San Francisco and went to the Chronicle and said, hey, here's my portfolio. And they started running them there. And then you get syndicated. Now you're worldwide. Now calendars and mugs. Like, there was a bit of a knight in shining armor there. It wasn't you traveling the world.
Have you heard Seth Godin's, like breakdown of, excuse me, the record industry and the TV industrial complex, and how like the record industry was perfect in the 60s and 70s. If you wanted a record, like you'd buy it, had the big artwork on it. If you played it a lot, it would get worn down, so you'd have to go buy another one. Mm-hmm. If your friend wanted to borrow it, you'd have to go get a second one. You'd drive to a store. On the way to the store, you're listening to the radio, which is just filled with nothing but content decided by the decision makers, like what you're listening to. And then you're driving to a store that has all that stuff, and it's laid out, and there's all these different records all competing
for
your attention.
But then step that back before they could even press it on wax, and that you would go, like, to the Globe Theater and watch a play or a symphony or, you know, an orchestra or whatever, you know, some sort of concert of, you know, a musician. And then you couldn't really take it anywhere.
Yeah.
Like, there was no way for you to take it to now where, like, you can take it anywhere. I mean, you can have it with you in the smallest
form. It's magic.
Form.
We can pull out our phone and press two buttons. You have to press Shazam, and then you have to press the other Shazam. I think they should change it to just when you open up the app, it's already going.
Yeah.
Because everyone's already like, come on, it's at the end of the... That's become like a little bit of a meme. Like, I've seen multiple people joke about, like, Shazam is a magical application that it makes whatever song's playing end before do that kind of thing. So, but we literally have a magic thing. It's not even, it doesn't even cost a dollar. It's free. And how are they paying for it? I guess just through, the VC model of stuff is you just build up a user base. Like, how many people have this app installed? Okay, we've got 2 million active users. We'll sell this to you for, you know, $18 million. And then you sell it to someone, and then they put ads on it. So it's up to them to monetize it. But a lot of people are in the business of just growing our user base. And then, okay, now you monetize after you give me money, because me, no one do monetize. And that's how, you know, all of them grew. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter.
Even Craigslist kind of had that weird thing where, like, they refused to take money. They still don't have ads. I mean, it's preposterous. That guy has money. Yeah, that guy makes money. I don't know that it's ever been disclosed exactly how. There's, like, it's just in the number of clicks. I guess I don't understand. It all seems like magic to me. I think that what you were saying, though, about, like, how it... The person who was playing in that symphony or that orchestra when the whole town went, hey, there's actually some entertainment happening. Like, entertainment as a whole was in demand. And then if you do it, especially if you enjoy it and people tell you you're good at it, like, entertainment's the most fun thing you can possibly do. It takes the least amount of your day. The time when you're practicing or working at it is fun. So there's really no downside to it. That, who wouldn't revere that? You're a person in a cubicle, person like on a stagecoach, like freezing on this bumpy, rickety wooden seat. Like, I would love to be in this stagecoach playing that lute like that guy
but
is.
But see, now I'm thinking about it, like, is this just true in Western culture, like 100 and 200 years ago? Because if we look around the world, is there's not like stuff set up as like, let's go to entertainment. It's like maybe just families like playing like folk tunes at home about stuff, and there's no thought of monetizing. It's just like, we sang with our family, that's what we did. We'd sing about the dirt and the clouds and the...
Well, I think in the American South, in like, you know, folk music and bluegrass and the blues and these things that are like, oh, we were all sitting around a fire or our front porch and we would just play. Grandpa'd play a harmonica, and so-and-so would pick up a banjo, and this person, and we just play music. That was what we did. That defined us. So yeah, maybe there is everywhere else.
I think of like, isn't, so Mozart and Beethoven and all those guys, like, they're really revered now, but at the time, like, they were also pop musicians, in that they're funded by the church, and like, there's money, like, these are the selected artists, and then the rest are like, no, of
so
course you're not.
So the church was like the record company?
Yeah, pretty much. Weird. Well, church controlled everything.
Yeah, they were the tastemakers. Anyway, so you want to have this Frank Zappa-esque, you know, the Simpsons built a world, Matt Groening built a world, Dr. Seuss built a world, Disney has a world.
Oh, yeah,
you know, Harry Potter.
And like, that's that grew bigger than the man himself, so much that even the man himself, like, it's known that, well, he was anti-Semitic and racist, and he, I don't know all the things, because it happened after the, if he was alive today, he'd be so done, like, even
Dr.
if he was
Seuss
a vegetable.
Did in, like, really, really racist, when he was Theodore Geisel, racist cartoons of, like, Japanese during, you know, the internment camp era. And obviously there was a lot of, like, hatred and anger toward Pearl Harbor. But still, when you see those editorial cartoons, you're like, this is a guy that went on to be, like, a beloved children's cartoonist. And, yeah, if he were around today, he would be just chopped down at the knees instantly. And
I wonder if I'm like that for, I brought this up on another, or no, it's not even a podcast that's out, but just the fact that, like, 60 years ago, if you said, I love lesbos and trannies, you'd get your ass beaten for saying you love lesbos and trannies. Now you'll get your ass, not beaten, but, like, you'll get torn down for using the terms lesbos and trannies. So it's like, before it was even supporting that in the general, like,
well, the weird thing about that, too, is that my mom in Reno, which is, like, kind of has some elements of not backwoods, but it's certainly not the most liberal or free. You know, have to go over the hill to San Francisco, you know, and there you'd find this, like, utopia of, everyone here. It's like an eclectic mix of all the weirdos. And in Reno, it was a little bit more like, you ain't from around here, are you? And my mom was, like, one of the, you know, she, not that I don't want to say the preeminent, but she dealt with a lot of trans people as a therapist, and she would refer to him, like, it's like, oh, I gotta see one, I'm gonna see one of my trannies today, and she loved them unconditionally. It was like such a, wanted to be known as the person, like, I really like, that's such a struggle emotionally, and on and on, like, in so there's no malice of any sort, it's just the language. And I'm sure there are people who used to, like, be very sweet and go, oh, bring in that little cripple boy, oh, there's that little retard, like, these horrible things that now we'd go, it's just, it's the linguistic component, it's the nomenclature.
George Carlin had, like, a 20-minute bit on just, we're dumbing down language so that it doesn't have the impact. It's taking power away from people, essentially, when you're stopped calling it fired. It's not fired anymore. It's, you were laid off. It wasn't a car crash. It was an automobile accident. And just all these kind of things. And the way he broke it down with just endless, the way Carlin would do, he'd give you like 100 more examples than you expected.
Those weren't my favorite things. I felt like his mind needed more stuff to chew on. And when he would get bored, he would...
You think it was too, like, verbal?
Yeah, it was just too much, like, gymnastics. It was, like, working out, like, getting his brain something to chew on of, like, I'm sped up, I'm slowed down, I'm left, right, like, oh, all right, when are you done with this?
I can't do it, but my friend does such a good George Carlin impersonation, and he would, like, just, he would be so good at just being, like, football, baseball, basketball, soccer ball, and it wouldn't even be, like, they wouldn't relate to anything. He would just, like, do balls, my balls. That's what I like to do.
Love it, George Carlin.
I feel like a lot of people are missing out on, it's important to go look, because it still holds up. Don't look at stuff that doesn't hold up. Like, I think a lot of old, like, Eddie Murphy doesn't hold up as much, and not to single out Eddie Murphy, a lot of it does, but there's a lot of, and a lot of old Carlin doesn't hold up, but there's some that really does, and I think people are missing out, because you see a lot of people at the open mics, like, you know that someone did something much better than that in 1992, right? Which you can't possibly have known to go look at that, but look at some of it.
This notable comic had a bestseller called Brain Droppings. All three of them. You, like, people on Jeopardy. Like, I get it. They're not supposed to be the most.
Did you see that one specifically?
Yeah, like, I did. It was last night, like, two nights ago. I couldn't believe it. It hurts your feelings. You're like, oh, you stupid nerds. How could you not? And they must feel that way all the time at, like, composers and on and on. It's and you're always going to disappoint someone. Like, there's this pantheon or this, like, you know, this hall of fame of greatness, and I'm certain there are more than I don't know than I do know, but the ones I do know that played from the gut, I mean, we care about them.
Can I ask you what you want, or is it the same?
I'm not having a vision board. I just want to make things that I like, inspire me, that I enjoy the process of doing it, and I want to, like,
how much greed is in there? Because I'll tell you, I've got a lot, and not like I don't want to take from other people, but when I look at Prince and guys of that nature, like his Paisley Park complex, like, with just, it's a 50,000 square foot complex recording studio, you know, it's got basketball courts and all that crap, and it's just this, it's a prison slash playland. It's the right way of Neverland? Doing Neverland Ranch, because Neverland Ranch was creepy and like rides, like you really like that stuff, and Prince was all about the work and like, no, I need to do more work, and this way I can have these studios going where they're recording this. I can go and lay down this guitar track here while they're doing this. I got to run over here to... So he's working on like five things simultaneously with other people engineering in the other room. So I look up to that. I've got a ways to go, but I really like...
See, I don't want... Well, I...
Somebody like Marin is happy and like, well, I want to stay in the garage and the cat ranch. And I'm like, I want to get the fuck out of this apartment so I can be loud and I can...
So this little space here was very appealing when we moved in, because it was like, oh, you could like work here, and you know, my life mate works out here a lot and it's quiet. Then everything is stashed away of mine. So if I want to screen print, I got to pull it out. I want to work on bikes, I've got to pull it out. But I can do everything here realistically. And I just want a bigger version of that, where I like could leave the tools out, like a bigger garage. And then that's about it. I just want to keep doing the things I like doing, and just in a less oppressive way, I guess, you know, like getting the TV show and working on that. There's a piece of me that was like, people would say it too, like, you know, when we're on season 8 of this, like, you just come in once a week and that'll be your job. And I'd think like, that's weird. Like, that never occurred to me. That was never really a goal, to just have this like kind of candy life where I'd pop in once a week and do this TV thing.
That would be fun though, because then that opens up all that space to do the other stuff you like.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Like, I mean, just imagining being an old Letterman, I don't know what Letterman's life was like, but you just imagine that. I knew that Ferguson didn't have to do as much towards the end, and they had like structure. They get it down. They get a rhythm after.
Yeah.
Which is why when a show goes away and then comes back after 2 years, it's kind of off. Like, the crew is different. The lighting is like, the color corrections. Like, couldn't you just do it like it was before, like Anderson, like the hair maybe? Or
I would think too, like, if I did, you know, that show was about kind of pop culture things and fantasy and sci-fi stuff, and I thought like, that'd be hilarious if that's what you get known for, but it doesn't mean you have to stop in any way, like drawing or animating or screen printing or any of those things, doing a podcast. Like, I think it would almost be funnier if, you know, if you found out that someone that you only associated with being like a cheesy television host was behind the scenes, like pumping out great poetry or really cool rock albums or something.
Yeah.
Like, that's so fascinating. That makes that person to me, and not to say like, that's what I want people to think, I'm really fascinating, but I wouldn't want to be hampered by the idea that I couldn't do it.
The thing is, you do like, you do want people to think you're fascinating, but you don't want them to merely, you don't want them to think you're fascinating in a oppressive way, like, I am interesting, you boring fuck. It's more like, look, we're all like, deep down, we don't really like any of this crap going on, and like doing taxes and waking up and putting on this shirt and going and doing, most of life is a drag. Here's what I like about life that isn't a drag. I bet you like it too. Here's why I like it, and because it's not a drag. And that's what like interesting is. So it's like, you're elevating other people in doing that. It's not like,
yeah,
that, I guess, which is where the billboard comes in, is I tie that into the oppressive side of things. It's like, I am great, because the art isn't that billboard, and it's not pictured as, and you can't convey all you do in the billboard. Billboards themselves it's a weird medium now. Like, the attention was all on billboards. Now it's not like it's gone, like, only do phone advertising now. It's more like...
Well, we live in LA too, where...
It's more of a local thing.
And it's all, I mean, it is stuff where it's entertainment-based. The rest of the country, and not the rest, but huge portions of it, it's a lot of, like, religious stuff.
It's scary.
It's weird, yeah.
In Texas, like, we both live there. When you drive north of Austin, like, just 10 minutes, it starts to get Jesus-y and, like, anti-abortion-y real quick.
Real quick, yeah.
And their graphic design department is real shit. It's they hate color and good design choices. They love like system, like aerial. They like yellow and red. Like, gun shows love yellow. Like, just black background with yellow font.
You know, yellow, I think, is most closely tied to memory. So maybe there has been like some analytics involved there, and some focus groups, and like, guys.
Weird. That's the one I brought up. So must be. I'm like proving its point. Like, I didn't remember any of the green ads.
Okay, so back to your day. You want to play from the gut. You want to create a world. But is that what drives you, or do you love the pencil hitting the page? Do you love like?
I talked about this with Mike Kaplan before. It's kind of interesting because I don't care that much about the pencil hitting the page. Like, I don't get a ton of joy out of the
drawing. Are you muscling through it, though?
Not so much. It's relaxing in that, like, I'm feeling productive while I'm doing it, and so I'm not beating myself up.
So you have an idea, you're like, oh, I'm going to do it. This baby is born that has a diamond for an eye. That's my premise for my comic. I got to go draw that. Not like, I want to draw that. That'd be fun to draw. Just, I got to go draw that.
No, yeah, it starts with idea first. And in my head, I have the completed thing that I want. And sometimes I get it all the way. Sometimes, or I'll never say I get it all the way. It's like, I get it most of the way.
Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
Like, yeah, this is good enough to ship. Or sometimes it's like, oh, it didn't turn out as cool as I wanted, but whatever. Like, the next one will turn out cool. I do have to ship something today. I'm like, recently, 2016, I'm all about, you have to put one thing out a day. Like, don't miss a single day.
And you call it shipping it.
Yeah.
Shipping it out to the internet.
Yeah, it's Seth Godin didn't call it. I think he borrowed it from someone else, but it's real artist's ship. So it's like, if you're just painting all day but no one sees it, then you're not the real deal. Like, a real artist, like, disagree. You have to actually ship it. But
Emily Dickinson.
Oh, Seth. never shipped any of it?
No shipping.
They're all different, just ways of looking at it. Like, no one's right or wrong.
Nope,
like,
I've gone ahead and been right here.
Anyway, oh, so you want to ship the time? Something. Well, someone has. It's like the tree in the woods. If no one hears it, kind of, can anyone hear you clap? If no one falls in the woods,
yeah.
But
joy is a part of it, but it's not the
for drawing specifically. Now, go to music though. With music stuff, I like the playing part of it. Like, I like to be there. I don't want the thing to just the song to be out. Like, I like the physical act of pressing your finger down on the string and like hitting it with a certain force and like vibrating your finger. Like, I enjoy that, but for whatever reason the pen on the page doesn't give me as much joy, because I think it doesn't happen fast enough. Like, with music, it's more of like you're playing and it's like more of a dance, whereas like drawing, it's more of a
is it a serial killer thing where you look at it afterward and go, there it is?
Yeah, a little bit. I do a lot of serial killer stuff without the serial killing. Like, a lot of people have...
Yeah, I think there's something to that. I mean, I think you can be an artistic serial killer, and the mindset is probably not that far off, where, like, you have a plan, you execute it, and then, like, when I go... So, when I record a CD, I won't listen to it for 10 years. And then one 10-year anniversary just passed, and I forgot to listen to it. But that, when I look back at comics especially, way more than jokes, like, because you hear your voice, you're too connected to it. But comics, I really like looking back at them years later and going, oh, this was one that I remember when I drew it. I wasn't that wild about it, but I really like it now, because you can visualize yourself and kind of where you were or what your mindset was like when you did it. So I do feel like there's a similarity there. Is that how you are too?
Yeah, and that's like another Seth Godin thing of him.
Enough with the Seth Godin.
I think that's the third time I brought him up. I just love I love him so much. He's my favorite turtle marketing guy. He said, like, I like having books on the shelf, like with the Kindle and stuff. Like, it's not the same as like having it there.
Yeah.
I like to pick it up and just hold it and remember like who I was when I wrote it, because I don't think I could write a lot of the books that I wrote. Like,
yeah.
Like, the current me can't write this book. Only me in 2007 could have written this one. And I think the same with the comics, like the one you drew like back then that you're referencing, is like, you couldn't have drawn it now. You weren't in that place.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think if you're an artist, you can't put it off. Like, Norman McLean put off A River Runs Through It. He wrote when he was like 70, and some of the reviews were like, this isn't a groundbreaking first novel. I wish he'd gotten started a little earlier. You know, because you do feel that way of like, you didn't have this book in you, but you had something.
Yeah.
If you're always growing, you're always doing, you're going to have dips, you're going to have low periods. But we put out, what, 30 albums?
John Merriman said of this, have you seen Dead Celebrity Magazine, the sketch that him and Kirk made?
No.
Where it's such a stupid and funny sketch where they're looking at celebrities in a magazine like, oh, dead, dead, and they're just pointing at like, dead, and they're just doing it kind of goofy, like more like Michael Deadson, and like making terrible puns with it. And then it's like one of them, Kirk, shows up, and it's like, wait a minute, Kirk, you're in this you're in this magazine. It's like, huh, weird. And then John Merriman comes out with a knife and like just starts murdering him, and then puts his photo up next to all the other dead celebrities. And when I asked him about it, he's like, yeah, it was one of those ideas where like we're like, we have to make it within the next 3 days before we think it's stupid. And yeah. I just love the thought behind that, is because you know it's going to be stupid.
Absolutely.
In 3 days, but if you do it, then it already exists, and you still know that it's stupid, but at the same time that it's stupid, it's also pretty damn funny. And heck, a lot of like Mitch Hedberg jokes, they're stupid, but they're really funny, and it's okay to not everything has to be clever and like Coen Brothers, like dark, smart comedy. Like some of it's just stupid, but the fact that it brings out the laughter is what's important.
Yeah, I think it's the most when it's done in that way, where like the Simpsons are great at that. So many things are good about like.
Have you tuned into Simpsons in the last?
Yeah, it's
years.
Way better than people give it credit for.
Is it?
Yeah.
I tune in every few years, and every now and then there's an episode that surprises me. That yeah. Like, there's some good stuff in that
like
one.
They switched the quality, and everyone was like, well, it doesn't even look like them anymore. And then once you get used to that, I mean, they've really made an effort to be weirder visually and do some really strange, like taking advantage of animation more than they had in the past. So I think it's evolved in a cool way.
It did lose a lot of its soul, but like you can't blame them, because it's like, what, we decided we're not going to ship it to Korea anymore to animate, and it takes longer, and it's more expensive, and it uses slave labor, and this is cheaper, and the technology didn't exist before, and what do you want from us? We can't do it differently yet.
Yeah, I still think it's great, and they're, you know, when they involve current like contemporary celebrities, it bums me out a little bit, because they're like
fishing
you're just
attention.
Doing what is like some marketing or branding who they used to rail against. You know, they would have the Fox executives like being lambasted and parodied on the show, and now it's like, well, you kind of clearly listen to them. You know, you have a celebrity on your show, and they're not really adding anything to it. It's just to hopefully bring in viewers, which I get that. I mean, you're on for almost 30 years, you're gonna have to make adjustments and stuff.
And on one side, it's a time capsule in a way, in that like, here's who was the most important like SNL host from 2004. It's like, really, that person? But yeah, in 2004, Ashley Simpson or whatever year it was the biggest artist of its time. And I think we've evolved a bit in that way, in that they couldn't get away with, we're starting to, our bullshit detectors collectively are not on board with the Milli Vanillis and things of those nature, lip sync, just frauds in general. We're sniffing out fraud more, like
better.
When something's just trying to be sold to us, which Beyonce's new Lemonade album, I thought the visual album aired live, like it moved me. I thought it was a great thing. At the same time, I know, because I see the articles, like the team of 15 writers, and like I know that there's a team behind it. I know Father John Misty wrote the hook on this. She's not a prince. She's not like going and like writing all the drum parts, like saying, okay, you got to play it like this. She's not a psychopath like that. It's a different type of psychopath. But as if it's a, or like with the new Star Wars, like Force Awakens, is that what it's called?
Uh-huh.
I enjoyed it, and I knew that it's a formula. They looked at stuff like, okay, let's lose this stuff from the prequels. Let's keep Han, Chewie, let's play with that dynamic. Let's give them what we want. So it's manufactured in a way to try to please a large audience. But as long as it's good, I'm fine with with that. If you're trying to impress me and get my dollars, just give me the actual
well
shit.
Do you care about that, you know, when you're, because now, you know, you do have to be,
I like both of it, like I enjoy a good, you know, steak, a good like nice fancy meal, but also a good greasy bad for you burger, and it's just different like types of art. I'm not all about the corporate art or about the
well, I guess as an
sucks.
animator, and even like your animations are just a lot of times a more in-depth version of like what a 3-panel comic would be. You know, they're saying something. So, you know, I guess if you're writing like narrative television, or, you know, you're telling a story, that would be harder nowadays, because they'd be like, that character's a little rough around the edges, or can we have that character be a little smarter because she's a woman? And you'd be like, I know this person, and there are dumb women, and that's how I want this character to be.
Yeah.
Ugh, that's tough. You know, so you're always having to change a little bit and just augment your characters in a way where it's like, yes, when we look back at some of those things before that were a little rough, like there was an earnestness to them where they're like, well, we weren't aware that we were offending anyone. We were just kind of creating it in a way
It's why Seinfeld is good. It's why Girls is good. And, oh, those are two bad examples. But it's also why Lemonade... So, didn't Piers Morgan, which who gives a fuck about Piers Morgan, but, like, I think he was complaining that there's not white women in the new Beyonce video, which that's good. It's not about that. It's supposed to be all black women. The black woman is the most, you know, oppressed, like, the whole Malcolm X speech that they put in it. That's good. It's all black women in it. But at the same time, it's good that Girls is about these four really entitled white girls in their early 20s, and I know that there's not a likable character. It's like, who am I supposed to like on the show? It's not about that.
Girls.
Yeah, exactly. You're supposed to, but it's like...
No, it's supposed to be a good show. Like, it could have been, but they didn't... They took those four entitled girls who don't grow up, and they don't have any arc as characters. They stay
dislikable. Yeah, they do stay the same.
The guys, the boys do, like, you start rooting for Ray, like, this guy has a little heart to him. Like, I want to see this guy succeed. That's maddening to me, because I want to see the other characters grow up a bit, and then when they continuously don't, it's just too maddening.
I think that's the message, though, but I might be looking into it too much, but I think that Lena Dunham is aware of that. I think she's smarter than people give her credit for, because I think they think that she's Hannah Horvath and all that thing, but I think that was a decision and not like just a byproduct of lazy writing, who knows, but or with Seinfeld, it's like there wasn't any black people on Seinfeld except for the mailman or something. It's like, yeah, it's about these four Jews that are really crazy and that are self-obsessed and hate the way the world is and the little nuances and are trying to and are pointing out little parts of etiquette that we all don't like in ourselves, like, oh, this party and I don't want to go to it, but we're all going to the party anyway. And
I don't think George is Jewish.
Oh, for sure, isn't he? Not Jason Alexander, but
George Costanza?
I thought they were all...
I don't think they're all Jewish. I don't think Kramer's Jewish.
Or it wasn't centered around their Judaism, but more saying, like, these are four of the same kind of, like, people.
That's all our time, Ramin.
Down with the Jews.
No, I know what you mean. I've never heard it expressed that way, though.
I just don't want everything to be, you know, the Benetton ad, which, like, well, we need more disabled people in this. Well, it might be a story about, like, just these four white people that hang out together.
Right.
And,
well, that's a thing I was noticing recently that is a strange thing to talk about, in that we're very diverse, especially living in Los Angeles. We all hang out together of every age, race, sexuality, ethnicity, you know, trans, asexual, gender neutral, on and on. We all get along very well. And yet when you go out in public, and this is one of the biggest cities in the world, you typically see, like, we're near Koreatown. See a lot of Asians in those places. If you go, meaning like restaurants and just any shop you go into. You go to Hollywood, where you'd consider, like, the most, like, mixed, you still don't really see, like, a mix everywhere you go. People kind of tend to stay...
Yeah, there's heavily Jewish parts of town, heavily Korean parts of town, heavily gay parts of town.
Yeah.
I think it's more comforting to group together. We just like to group together. But they're not exclusively. Like, you'll still see every type of person, but it'll be like, this is the predominantly rich side of town, the predominantly...
Yeah.
Mexican side of town. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe New York does a better job. When you're on the subway, like, you see
everyone. I guess because there's no choice. Like, you can't be like, we're starting this here. It's like, no, you're not. We live right above you. We're making this town ours.
The A train, car 43.
There's space to spread out and group. I think we just want to. It's weird being like, I'm Persian, and Persians don't, in general, like, they're not as grouped together. They're more, like, integrative than... There are some, I guess, but it's just not as heavy as, like, Indian or Chinese or Korean. They're more, like, grouped together. And Persians, I guess the ones that left during the revolution are more... integrate more.
Sure.
More about learning the language and the cultures of here. Like, yes, let's celebrate Christmas. And, like, rather than, no, we're celebrating our own Farsi Christmas thing here. It's like, no, we are just like you. Don't kill us. Like, they killed us there.
When you're on stage, sometimes you call yourself Ramon.
Oh, yeah. All of the different bastardizations of it. Ramon is a big one. Like, I bring myself up as, hi, my name is Rudolph Loser. Sometimes just a bastardization of my name, because I just like to get it out. I like to do it in a longer set. I like to do it as many different ways as possible, just to kind of chop it up. Like, I don't give a shit about my name either. And because after...
But it's four syllables.
Yeah, but after... So... You've never had to deal with this, Because you're David, and David is...
No, there's not... it's Dave, or is it David? Is it Dave or David? That's what I get, more than I've ever gotten in my life.
Oh.
For the last 5 years, I started getting that all the time. I'm like, I never got this as a
kid.
Okay,
then you have experienced it a little bit. So I've had it for 31 years of like, is it ramen? Is it... And it's like, I just don't care anymore. Like, it's, yeah. You're talking to me. I'm this thing, the symbol...
I'm this entity.
Yeah, it's like you already have my attention. We're already in dialogue. I don't need the... And it's oftentimes for like a form or something. But if it's for tech support, like, you don't need to pronounce it right. Like, this interaction is going to be over in hopefully 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not going to remember it. So it's just I like to... And I don't like the people that... Or not the people themselves, but I think it's very silly when it's like, actually, it's Kathleen with a C. And it's like, I don't give a fuck. And...
So sorry to jump in on there, but keep trying to figure out the essence of Ramon Loser. You mentioned like psychedelics in your act a little bit, and then we were in Austin at the same time, so I would come back and see you perform occasionally.
Yeah, you were one of the seniors that had left already, and like I don't know if your photo was on the... No, you'd never won the... But you like, even though your photo wasn't on the wall of people, you were still one of those. You might as well have been. And we all know the nature of the, you know, funniest person in Austin contest, where it's like the person that won, it could have very well have just been the person that won second or third, but they just happened, the first winner happened to get the first place. So you were one of those people that had left before my time, but I like looked up to. And
okay.
I think I first learned about you because... Doug Mellard and Katie Shoemaker were like, we're thinking of getting a David Huntsberger tattoo. I'm like, what's David Huntsberger? It's like, you don't know Dave? And then they showed me like your comics and stuff on their website, and I was like, oh, cool. And I don't know if they actually got the tattoo or not, but they were going to get a tattoo and not tell you about it, and then just show up one day and just be like, hey, what do you think about this? And they're thinking like you would have loved it, or it would have pissed you off or something.
I would have loved it, yeah. Damn it, I wish they had done that.
I hope I didn't blow their cover and they're waiting, but like I feel like if they would have done it, they would have done it by now.
Yeah,
this was true. Like 2007 or something.
Yeah, and then we're kind of similar in that I'm like on stage much more linear, a little bit more buttoned down, but I still feel like I like to be as imaginative as possible. But I like that yours, you know, your little icon, yours meaning your stand-up, like the thing you want to be the brand of you is like this rainbow and a skull. And when you are on stage, you dance, you'll sing a little bit, but not in a way where it's like 2, 3, 4. You just kind of like have a very loose kind of, you know, presence about you.
And good.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem colorful and light, and that you are like accessing this very right brain kind of silly, goofy, weird.
Right brain is my favorite. I would live in right brain if I could.
Really? I like
you
the balance.
You need left brain to pay the bills, because like to live in this world, to live in reality, you need left brain. And people who are very left brain do very well in reality.
So do artists. I mean, if you can, you know, drawing a theme to something, bringing your movie to a conclusion, you know, having your song be structured in a way that makes sense.
If you've got 20% left also in there, because like, you know, you always hear it's like, but he's also a very good businessman. He's always got, like, they always have to add that part. Or it's like, he wouldn't have done that, like Kurt Vonnegut, like, if it wasn't for his wife also not ghostwriting, but, you know, helping in the editing, or George Lucas's wife doing the... There's always, like, someone behind the scenes that's taking care of the shitty part, the part that we don't like to do, the going over, reading it again, editing, not just, like, explode your idea, and there it is. It's like, well, it's not done yet. It's 95% there, but unless we finish that 5%, no one's going to digest it correctly. So,
right.
And that 5, I truly believe that the 5% is just... It's divided into halves. The first 95% takes as long as the last 5% to get it just right, to get those kinks, especially in software and
because you design
books.
Websites and like you...
I'm getting out of the web game a little bit because it's getting too... I don't like working on other people's stuff. And
well, what are you doing for money? Are you making enough with comics and your website and stand-up and that sort of thing? Or
For a time, it fluctuates within every month. When I released Grow Shark, the game, you can get it on iTunes or on Android. Look up Grow Shark. Give it a 5.
That's Grow Shark, GROW.
And if this comes out later, then Ski Lopa will be out too. Ski Lopa is going to be the skiing one. I'll show you later.
Are you an antelope?
No, you're just a person. But there's an antelope in it as one of the rewards. But in Grow Shark, at its best, it was doing about 250 to 300 downloads a day, and that's like pretty much all profit. Like they take like 5%, I think, off the top. Google Play does. So, and there's no overhead. I don't have to ship little games to people. They click it and I just see the number. I see the graph go up. So that was like a taste of, oh, this is legitimate. And after selling comic books where it costs me like $4 per book when it's all like printed out, and then I sell them for 10, and then the store takes a cut, so by the time one is sold, it's like, okay, and I've had to ship it to there, it's like a lot of overhead, and I'm just seeing this. And the software world, it's just such a better business model for it, and it allows for more creativity and expressing yourself, because it's not just the drawings, it's the I get to interact with it, and I think that's a better long-term thing. I like it more. It just takes longer.
That's a lot of skills. Writing software, drawing the little things, making them move. I mean, that is a... Did you go to school for all this stuff?
No. I guess I learned... Programming I learned from my dad, because he just taught me Visual Basic and HTML and stuff like that early on, and I was lucky to be brought up in a house with a tech dad, not a like, get that away from me, like I want to work on cars, which who knows, maybe if I had a car dad, then I'd just be a better car person. I'd be like, oh, I'm glad I'm not just hunched over a computer all day like all those fucking trolls. Who
but
knows?
Cars is like hands-on. I mean, like you said,
and
like,
it's
you
going
know.
Away, like, because it's not as...
Well, just, I mean, yeah, software's not going away, but just, yeah, you made it once, and then you just watch profits come in extendedly beyond that. That's pretty incredible.
That was at its best, though. So since then, it's died down.
Yeah, but
like,
I mean,
it's like, oh, like some days I get nothing. I'll get like 5 downloads, some days 20, some days it'll spike up a little bit, because I shared, like, sometimes a cool thing happens, which I don't get to control. Someone will share, like, a comic book I did, because I put them up online for free. I started doing this middle 2015. Here's how much the world has changed. When I first made After You Die, I released 3 images, and then a picture below, like, to own the whole book, buy now. And, like, hundreds of people bought it. Uh-huh. That was 2 years ago. If I did that shit today, no one would buy that shit. They'd be like, what are you talking about? We've got free content everywhere, and that's how much it's shifted in 2 years. So then, after I noticed that, I'm like, I'm just going to put it out for free, and then people that want to own a physical copy will get it. And then I sold even more than that first time where I did the teaser thing. So occasionally someone will share an old thing I did, and then that'll lead me to the site, and then I'll get a little boost in sales of all the various things based on that. Wow. And that's what I'm hoping will scale up, where I put up enough stuff that hopefully has an impact on people. If it's good, it will. If it's not, then it'll get buried. And it, you know, the market is the market is the market is the market is the market. So it's like, I can't control it. It's just, if people like it, they do. And then they come back and get it. And I'm hoping that new software, new games will feed into that, the whole growing of the brand of that. And I don't even know, I can't articulate, like, well, what are your brand values? I don't know. It's just stuff that I think is...
But you're aware of all that stuff. I mean, you're in that world that is the future, and have your finger right on that pulse. And you have the tools to take advantage of it. That's a pretty enviable position to be in.
The super narcissist, we've already gone into this, like that, or at least I believe, like, to some level, we're all narcissists. And the people that aren't doing show business sometimes are even more narcissists. They don't know it. Like when they go up during their best man speech and they really like put a lot of weight into it. It's like, I'm going to crush this and kill it. It's like, you know, it's just a best man speech. It's not live at the Apollo. You're just supposed to say a couple of good things about the bride, a couple of mean things about the groom, and you know, get out of there.
Yeah.
So it's all narcissism, but my fantasy is being like really hitting it big with VR, because I think that can, I don't know, there's more freedom in that. I would rather pop as a VR person than as a Twitter person or something like that. I like to think that the amount of success I want is for a platform that doesn't exist yet.
I like it.
I can't be really big until I'm in my 40s and 50s. But if I die before that, that's okay too.
Well, man, there's so much more stuff. You're an interesting dude, Ramin.
You too.
And we'll have to pick it up again down the road, talk more about drugs and the afterlife and VR and all that stuff. But glad you like that Gallagher from June Lake.
Me too. Me too.
Thanks for stopping by, buddy.
Thanks for having me. It's cool. A pleasure.
We'll get Ramin back in here down the road as well and talk more. And if you haven't checked out Strippy Comics, do that. I highly recommend him. He's pretty prolific. He makes stuff, or as he calls it, you got to be shipping. He's shipping stuff every day. He's putting something out pretty constantly. It's really impressive. He's a busy little guy and a funny dude. So check out his work. And if you're in Los Angeles and you go to Meltdown Comics, you can see his little stand there with the rainbow skull, which is his sort of branded logo that he's... And not to say like he's branding it, but that's just his thing that if you see it, you're like, ah, that's Ramin. So, all right, let's get out of here. Thanks for rating the show and subscribing and telling your friends about it and whatever else. There are some stickers to be had, like I said, in a couple weeks. I'll make another announcement on the podcast as well, but I should have some sort of Space Cave poster that you can get. Maybe even a shirt. I've been dabbling with the idea of doing a couple versions of that as well. So I might even do that. I don't know how interested you are in that, but let me know, maybe via Twitter or email, if that's something that you might be interested in, and I'll start working on it. Otherwise, hope things are going well in your world. And then this music, this is a song that is old. It's been around for maybe like 10 years now or so, and I don't feel like it ever got enough traction, but I thought it was great. Maybe I'll go through a little run of songs like this, or I'll mix them in from time to time. Just those ones that, for whatever reason, didn't get played a lot, and yet I feel like it should have been. And maybe that's just me. But this is from a band from, I think they're from Athens, Georgia, called Elf Power. And this song's called Palace of the Flame. Thanks for stopping by the Space Cave.